Greetings and welcome. I'm Mark Pitstick, your host for Ask the Soul Doctors on HealthyLife.net Radio. After working with many thousands of people over the last 40 years, I've assembled sensible, evidence-based answers to the most commonly asked questions about life, death, and afterlife. And each month on this show, I interview experts on consciousness topics who share their answers. We don't claim to have all the answers or the only answers, but we do have some very good answers that have helped many people make more sense of their Earth experience. And with us today to help answer those questions is Mark Anthony, the psychic lawyer. Mark is a world-renowned psychic medium who specializes in communication with spirits. He is descended from a long line of psychics who have helped others over the years. Mr. Anthony has appeared on radio and TV shows on NBC, ABC, CBS, Fox, and Coast to Coast, to name just a few. He has been a featured speaker at conferences, churches, and universities, including Harvard, Brown, and Yale. His book, Never Letting Go, is a guide to healing grief with help from the other side. Mark is a successful attorney with a law degree from Mercer University in Georgia and studies at Oxford University in England. Impressive. Well, Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's really great to be here, and I'd like to, you know, extend my best wishes to all the listeners.
Thank you. And before we start on the questions, please tell our listeners when you first became of your psychic abilities and how.
That's a good question, Mark, and one that I'm asked a lot. Most mediums, like myself, will tell you that it started around age 4. I started having encounters with invisible friends, and I started talking to people. And what a lot of mediums recount is like how their childhood is so terrible, whereas mine, both my parents were mediums. This is a hereditary trait which runs in my family. So they were really good about things, and they'd sit down and say, okay, Mark, we understand what's happening, and it's okay if you talk about it to us. Just try not to talk about it to people outside of the house because they won't understand. So it was really kind of cool growing up in this psychic environment. I always like to make the joke, Mark, that my childhood was like the Sixth Sense meets Everybody Loves Raymond.
So your answers to these questions then will be based on not only what you've learned professionally over your many years as a psychic, but also what you have seen and heard personally yourself.
Absolutely. You know, the best way to learn things is not only from studying, but from the personal experience itself. And then, of course, having parents that were already experienced in spirit communication, they gave me insights. You know, I really liked something that you said at the beginning of the show, how you said that we don't have all the answers. And that's a very important point because, yeah, and I get emails and Facebook questions and tweets from people that say, well, you should know this and you should know that. And the fact of the matter is, no person is all-knowing and all-seeing. And because I'm a medium, that doesn't mean I know all things. What it does is it gives me insights. And today's show is about that. It's about the insights that I have about spirit communication and life after death based on the genetically inherited trait of mediumship that I have and on my personal experiences and the fields of study in theology, quantum physics, and dealing with people that I've spent my life engaging in.
Awesome. And with your attorney training and still practicing as attorney, that just lends all the more credibility to it. Well, let's dive in. And, of course, the first question most people ask is, who am I?
I believe that human beings are actually multidimensional beings. And what I mean by that is we're infinite immortal spirits that are temporarily tethered to a body. And I think one of the best ways to explain that is think of a bottle with a cork in it, you know, like a wine bottle, let's say. Our soul is currently encapsulated in this body, and our brain is the cork. Our brain is the arbiter between the material world, which is finite. Everything that you and I know and can experience and understand is finite. Yet the other side, the afterlife, is infinite, And there are reasons that we're here to experience a finite, limited existence. And when it's our time to leave the material world, the brain, which houses, you know, fear and ego and all the limitations of our existence, that's released, and then our spirit reverts back to its immortal state. But it's more to it than that, because we still have an eternal component. So while on one level we are experiencing a material world existence, our higher self is still connected to, you know, for lack of a better term, to God, to the collective consciousness, which is the other side.
Okay, great. And so the next question that obviously leads from that, that people ask is, well then, why am I here? Why on this planet in this vast universe?
That's an excellent field of inquiry, and one that people have been asking themselves and religious leaders and spiritual leaders since the dawn of time. Based on what I can tell, it appears that we lead a series of material world incarnations. And the fascinating thing, Mark, is that reincarnation is at the root of all major religions. Not just Hinduism and Buddhism, but also in Judaism and Christianity as well.
Right.
In ancient mystical sects of Judaism, there's references in the Chassidic sect as to a succession of lifetimes. Early Christian theologians discussed particularly Origen of Alexandria, who lived in the 3rd century A.D., discussed leading a succession of lifetimes. He said that even Satan will eventually ascend into the white light. And so when you look at that and with the work I've done communicating with spirits, because they all talk about coming through several lifetimes. And in the field of near-death experience research, the vast majority of people who have a near-death experience where they clinically die, they leave their body, cross into the light, and then the body's resuscitated and they come back into the body, they all talk about reincarnation. And I think that the reason that we're here is that there are experiences and sensations and things that we cannot experience while we're in an infinite state, because the infinity of the other side is without physical death, it's without pain, it's without illness, it's without old age. Yet here in the material world, we can experience things here that we cannot there. And for whatever reason, that appears to be important to our spiritual development in the long term, that the purpose of the spirit is to continually evolve and grow and learn. And you know, there's this notion in a lot of traditional religions that, okay, when you die, you stand before this throne, and it's like, okay, you are bad, ding, going down into hell, or you are good, ding, and you go up into heaven. I'm not saying that there are not levels and multiple frequencies to the other side, but that type of simplistic view is based more in medieval imagery of a king, a male-dominated version of the afterlife, which when you start working with it, you see that that is a finite attempt by finite beings to put a face on the infinite. And
sure.
Our
yeah, that's a great point. I know
yeah.
I often tell others, in what other area of life today do we rely upon millennia-old models, not for health care, not for science, not for transportation, but we do in many respects that with our beliefs about afterlife. Well, the third question, and then you've touched it on a little bit, people ask then, so what happens after I die? What are the possibilities?
I think the possibilities are beyond our finite understanding, but that doesn't mean we can't try. What happens when we die? And the first line of my book, Never Letting Go, is when you die, you really don't. And physical existence may end, but the physical aspect of us is an infinitesimal subfraction of what we really are. So when we leave our body, we revert to an immortal consciousness. And the best way I can describe it, using finite terms to try to grasp an infinite concept, is that every human being, every soul, is a drop of water, which is pure consciousness. And when we leave the body, that drop of water plunges into the infinite ocean of the other side and is therein interfaces and connects and is connected to everything and everyone everywhere. However, we maintain our individuality because I believe that's the true gift from God, one of the true gifts from God is our individuality, and we can separate, we can detach from that collective consciousness when we need to or when we want to communicate with those of us who are living in the material world.
Very good. What else could you share with listeners about that? What are some of the, what's the spectrum of possibilities when a person passes on?
They're infinite. There's no one size fits all. I have a lot of people contact me about loved ones who've committed suicide. And in traditional Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, those who commit suicide go to hell. And people are just devastated at the thought that a loved one goes to hell. And in my work and in my next book, which is going to be released in March, Evidence of Eternity, I spend a lot of time discussing suicide. And I can tell you this, there is no one-size-fits-all. And we are all the children of God, God being the most loving parent of all, and no parent could ever condemn a child to an eternity of suffering. Now, that doesn't mean there are not repercussions for our behaviors, but this medieval, Bronze Age nonsense of, you're being cast into the pit of fire forever. I mean, that's just, I'm sorry, and I don't mean to offend anyone, but that's just primitive mythological nonsense.
You're on the right show. You can say that. I don't think we get a lot of fundamentalist listeners here. Is there a God, a higher power, a source, whatever you want to call it? And if so, what is that phenomena like?
Absolutely, God exists. And God exists in spite of religion, not because of religion. And even though, I do refer to religions as being mythologically and fear-based, religions also serve a tremendous purpose and a wonderful purpose. I like what Pope Francis has been saying. He's not out to change people or indoctrinate people or to make somebody believe differently than what they do. I believe that religion is a path to connecting with God as long as it is not used to justify or promote anger, fear, bigotry, hatred, or violence. This is when any connection with God ceases to exist. God, and I use the word God, and many people refer, God has a multitude of names, some of which you brought up, such as Source, Spirit, Vishnu, Krishna, Jehovah, Allah, Yeshua, the Great Spirit, and so on and so forth. But God is the source of all light, power, love, creativity, energy, in the intelligence in the universe. And God is the spiritual being, which is multidimensional, transcends all space and time. Everything is connected to God, and that's how God is aware of what's happening everywhere at all times. And God is, in one sense, so far beyond our comprehension, and in yet another sense, so easy to grasp. And I love what the Hindus say, and I quoted this in my book, Never Letting Go, that God is love. And when you look into the eyes of someone you love who truly loves you, then you're catching but a glimpse of God.
Good deal. What else, especially when you do your psychic readings, what else have you learned about the nature of the divine that you can share with the audience?
God is, we're all part of God. We're all cells in the body of God. We're all created in the image of God. Now, in the image of God, and I don't mean to sound facetious, but God is certainly not a bipedal higher order primate. When I say that we're created in the image of God, God is a spiritual being, ergo, we are spirits, and we are all interconnected to God. And people say, well, you know, do you ever hear God? And the better question is, well, why don't you? We all hear God. There comes a time, I think, in everybody's life where you have the capacity to hear the voice. And when we think, we hear a voice in our head, and then that's the one that we hear our thoughts in. And occasionally you will hear another voice, and it's always loving and very gentle. Now, I don't want that confused with paranoid schizophrenia, where people have an actual organic brain difference from quote-unquote healthy brains, where you hear voices that say, you know, kill and destroy and all that. That's an actual health problem. What I'm talking about is on the pure spiritual level. And when I talk to my friends who are born-again Christians, and they talk about, I received a calling, I understand what they're talking about because I have heard that as well. And it may be very simple. It may be just a few words. For example, in one meditation that I had, I was going through a very difficult and painful period of my life. And I said, I need to be better. And then in my meditation, I perceived an energy, and I know this may sound bizarre, but I perceived what I envisioned Jesus to be like, although he didn't look like the pictures that you popularly see. He looked at me and just said, then be better. And it was really profound, Mark, because what resonated through every fiber of my being was that I didn't need a lesson in how to be a better person, a kinder, a more compassionate person. And I was coping with a lot of depression and anger at the time. I already knew those things. It was accessing that and putting aside the anger and the depression and the sadness that I was going through and just being better. I already knew it. And the fascinating thing, when I've talked to other people of Christian faith who have received messages like that, quote-unquote messages from Jesus, are always very short and profound and powerful. And when I've spoken to my Hindu friends about when they receive messages from Shiva, Vishnu, or Krishna, the messages are always very short, positive, and profound. And I think, you know, given my cultural background, I'm putting the face of Jesus, which is perfectly okay, to help me to understand to the interface with the divine, which is infinite and really beyond my finite ability to comprehend.
Sure. Okay, great. Well, let's start in on number five, knowing that we've got a break coming up and we won't be able to get through this, because this is a long one. And I'm sure, like me, you've dealt with so many people who are suffering. I mean, this is the sort of thing that motivates a person to go to a psychic to answer questions, to relieve their grieving, they're in pain, they're fearful, and so on. So the question, which again we'll address after the break, is, so if there's this God of love and if we're infinite beings, why is there suffering? And this is especially difficult to understand when children are involved. So what are your understandings about that, please, Mark?
I remember there's an old movie that I really enjoyed, and it was Oh God, and it starred George Burns and John Denver, and George Burns played God, and John Denver asked him the same question. He said, how can you tolerate war and starvation and suffering and disease? And God looked at him and said, how can I tolerate this? How can you? Didn't
right.
I give you free will? And it's very, you know, even though the movie was termed a comedy, there was so much in it which was incredibly profound. And the question is, if God is love, then why do we endure this? That's because there is no hell, but there is reincarnation. And hell is here on earth, and we go through a succession of lifetimes in this material world, earth plane, and when we're done and we've achieved all of the experiences and balanced out our behaviors and karma, if you will, then we have no more need to return to the material world. I don't think it's quite that simple, because I think once we're done here, I don't think we're just done with Earth. I think that there's more planes of existence that we go on to, but that's what I feel based on what has been communicated to me from the other side. But for the purposes of this discussion, the terrible things that happened to us, and I am not for one second downplaying the suffering of anyone. You know, when I look at people who've lost children, you know, we try to make sense of what's going on in the Middle East and in Crimea and in North Korea and Africa and even in our own families. I mean, for myself, in the last week, my uncle died, and then a few days later, his eldest son died in an accident. Okay.
Oh my.
So within 5 days, my family has sustained two terrible losses, and within the same family, my uncle's family, and it's difficult to think that, well, how could God do this to me? But then again, we're also limiting ourselves to our function here. Perhaps these things happen to us so that we can grow. And I firmly believe, Mark, that the reason that we grow is because of negative and painful things that happen to us. So I could either become an alcoholic and engage in impulsive and destructive behaviors, or I can become a deeper, more understanding, more compassionate, and wiser person in response to a terrible tragedy.
Okay, good. Now let's go a little deeper with the children. It's been said that it's important that we remember that even though a child might be young in earth years, that child's soul or essence could be more evolved, an old soul, and that's why that entity didn't need to go through a long life. Does that jive with what you pick up?
Absolutely. In fact, in readings that I do for clients where I connect with spirits of loved ones on the other side, if I see a bright star, that usually means that somebody, if it's a woman or a man, they had a child which either died in utero or very, very young. And I'm always curious why they appear in the form of a star. It could be that they weren't tainted by material world existence, or it could be spirits know that that's what I will understand. You know, it's a recognizable concept. Yet communicating with this, the spirit of an infant or a fetus or a very young child is not goo goo gaga. That entity is an immortal living spirit, and it's amazing what they know about the family that never got to know them. In several readings, the spirit even indicated, like one time I think I was doing a reading, and the spirit of an unborn child started talking about Mr. Coffee coffee maker, and the client goes, oh my gosh, she goes, I bought one of those yesterday. And she said, and I miscarried this child, you know, 15 years ago. So what the spirit was letting her know is that he, in this case, was aware of what was going on in her life. And so even though he was not born into the material world, he was still part of her life in the spiritual sense and fully aware of what was going on with her and with her family.
Good deal. Well, great insights. Another question that people commonly ask is, will I really see my departed loved ones again when I die, and can I communicate with them now, and how can I best communicate with them if so?
Well, that's like three questions.
Yeah, I
know. Let's take the
kind
first
cheating.
One. It is my firm belief that God exists, heaven exists, our soul is an immortal living spirit. We can communicate with those souls, and when it is our time, we'll be reunited with our loved ones in the light. I base that not only on my own faith, but on my own experience and on the science of near-death experience and survival of consciousness studies. In my work as a psychic medium, I've had many spirits tell me who greeted them when they crossed into the light. And the client who's alive and well that I'm reading for is just flabbergasted at the friends and relatives which have come forward. In near-death experience studies, and they're conducted all over the world, when a person crosses into the light, they come into contact with people that have died. They do not come into contact with people who are alive. And there was an interesting case study in Japan where a woman died on an operating table but then was resuscitated, and she said, "It was so odd because I saw my sister, but she is not dead." And her parents said, "Well, you didn't know this, but she was killed in a car accident yesterday." So she did not know her sister had passed, yet encountered her spirit on the other side. So there's science to back this up. There are the experiences that myself and other mediums, and then, of course, there are the teachings of the great spiritual leaders who all tell us that there is a world yet to come.
Okay. How about the second half of that? Can people communicate with their departed loved ones now?
Absolutely. Through a medium like myself, you can communicate with your loved ones. And the fact of the matter is, in most people report having a dream, but it wasn't really a dream. It was a realistic conversation, because there's a difference between a dream and a visitation. They report catching a glimpse of a loved one out of their peripheral vision, or suddenly smelling a familiar scent associated with a person where there is no source for that. Turning on the radio all of a sudden, maybe when you're driving, and there's that song that makes you think of that person. And objects like coming home in a photo album just on the table just happens to be open to a picture of the person who died. But there's all types of contact experiences. Spirits reach out from the other side to let us know that they're alive and well in spirit form. The issue is whether or not people here are open to the contact, aware of it, and if they have it, are willing to accept it as reality. Our loved ones are around us all the time, and they're constantly reaching out to make contact to us. In fact, in my book, Never Letting Go, the first chapter is entitled "To Heal Grief, Start with Belief," and that's belief not only in God, but in the existence of an afterlife. And the second chapter is entitled "Doubt is Part of the Journey." And I remember a rabbi telling me, "How can you have faith without doubts?" And then there's the chapter, "How Spirits Contact Us." And there's several ways that they do this. And the problem is, I call it cross-examining your experience. Okay, being a lawyer, cross-examination is where you question something to where you're going to beat it till you get the answer you want or supposedly get the truth out of it. But more often than not, what lawyers do is cross-examine somebody the way a Marine would use a machine gun, sort of to pummel it. So let's say that you're driving in your car and you're thinking about your son who has died. And then you turn on a song, and there's a song by Maroon 5 that he used to listen to all the time, and it makes you think of him. Well, is that just a coincidence, or spirits are pure energy? They communicate to us through waves of frequency. They certainly can not only hear our thoughts and words and feelings, but they can hear those of frequency, of radio waves. So what the spirit's doing is directing your attention and prompting you to turn that on. Now, people say, "Oh, that's really far-fetched." Really? Then why does it happen to so many people worldwide? It's because spirits reach out to us, and they're using impulse and electricity and frequency. Other people, "Gee, every time we talk about my mom, the lights in this room blink." Mm-hmm. Well, spirits, being energy, can interfere with electrical fields. "My husband hasn't come to me, yet I have these dreams where he speaks to me." Okay. And then I asked the client, "Well, did the dream seem real?" "Yeah, it didn't seem like a dream at all. It seemed like an actual conversation." That's because when we go into the sleep state, our brainwave pattern goes from the beta state. That's what you and I are, hopefully, that we are in right now, Mark. That's, the conscious, aware state. And as we drift into sleep, we go into alpha. And then and we go into deeper sleep, you go into the theta level. And it is on the alpha and theta level where brainwave activity surges. Spirits can see that. So the spirit aligns his or her brainwave frequency with your brainwave frequency, boom, you get a frequency match. Just like tuning into a radio station where 89.5 105, they're at 101.7, and you meet somewhere around 99.3. And that's the way it is theorized spirit communication works. Spirits know this. So you have the experience, and you can accept it, you can give yourself permission to have it and accept it and rejoice in it, or you can cross-examine it. Well, that couldn't be true. It's my imagination. This is impossible, and let me just throw doubt and fear at it. And there's nothing really wrong with doing that, because that's a very human thing. It's also a very male thing to do. Women tend to be more accepting of these, because spirit communication is emotionally based activity, and women tend to handle their emotions better than men. So the choice is yours whether or not you want to give yourself permission to have this experience and to accept its reality. But the fact of the matter is, spirits are around us constantly. They're aware of our pain and suffering. They don't want us to feel badly, and they do make an effort to communicate.
Excellent. Wow. Yeah, I noticed on your site, in addition to a psychic medium, you're a spiritual counselor, and I can see why. Very good words here, lots of wisdom. Well, let's look at question number 7. Are there really ghosts and evil spirits, and if so, what are they?
Wow, that's such a fun topic. I need to come back at Halloween, and we can do one on this, too. But so many people want there to be evil spirits and demons and devils and all that sort of thing. I'm not a big believer in negative energy, although jerks die every minute. but once someone who's negative or evil, like Osama bin Laden or an Adolf Hitler dies, when they cross to the other side, their ego is what remains behind, and now they have to reflect on what they've done. That doesn't mean that, they don't carry those memories with them, but they're certainly not an evil spirit. I also don't believe in hell or the devil. I think it is ridiculous to think that God created a negative entity to fight with for all of eternity, but then like a Viking hero prevail at the very end. Once again, this is all Bronze Age, primitive, superstitious fears that have evolved over the century. However, there are frequencies to the other side. The higher frequencies would be what I call the heaven dimension. The lower frequencies are more removed from God. There are also a multitude of intelligent, non-human spiritual entities. Some are more aligned maybe with plant life or the earth or animal life, and it's not that they're negative or evil. It's just that they're a different radio station, if you will. Now, when it comes to ghosts and hauntings, there's three theories on that. Number one is that a ghost is trapped here. Number two, that it's a spirit who comes between this side and the other side to frequent a place. Or number three, that it's not a sentient spirit at all, but an energy echo. Let's take them real quick one at a time. One, spirit trapped on this side. I don't believe that. Even though never letting go, I talk about spirits who linger in a place for a while. It's because the other side is without time. Time is timeless. So spirit may be in a location for a while for what we think of as 20, 30, or 40 years, whereas on the other side, in their reckoning, that's just a few moments. And they're aware, and they have the ability to let go of this world and transition into the light anytime. Secondly, do they come back and forth? Yes, they do, all the time. Third, the residual energy echo. Okay, watch these shows on TV, all these ghost hunters are running around with these night vision goggles, and they shake the camera and everyone screams, and somehow that's supposed to be evidence of a spectral phenomenon. It's really corny, in my opinion. Matter retains energy. So let's say a murder or some type of tragedy happened in a location. It's like an echo, and the echo continues and continues and continues. And this particular type of ghost is no more an immortal living spirit than your reflection in a mirror is a living person. It's simply that. It's a reflection, or it's an echo. And it keeps getting replayed and replayed and replayed, and you can pick up on it, and it feels like a spiritual entity, and it can be quite unnerving, because when a spirit communicates with you, they're pure energy. that energy interfaces with your electrical field and the physiological response is cold chills. Ergo, we think it must be negative when it isn't. And so in these residual energy echoes, they can be interrupted and stopped, a.k.a. house clearing and getting the negative energy out of it. But it is not a sentient spirit. So I just gave you a whiz-bang, boom, Cliff Notes crash course on hauntings, and I hope that answers the question.
Sure. Yeah, good job. Well, the next one we'll at least start with. People ask, how can I best hear my inner self's voice and know my highest purposes?
I think that prayer and meditation are the key. Prayer is when you talk to God. Meditation is when you listen. And so praying, I have found when I'm stressed out, if I start to pray, and I was raised Catholic, I don't subscribe to everything the Catholic religion, you know, teaches because I just don't. But I do like the prayers. And prayers, whether you're saying a series of the Lord's Prayer or Hail Marys or you're chanting, you know, Krishna and mantras, what it does is it centers and focuses you and it removes the stress and negativity because you're opening yourself up to the God connection. When you meditate, this is when you clear your consciousness of distractions. I don't believe these people say you must think of nothing. It's like, really? I think you can focus on one thing. And I like to teach people that your consciousness is like a blackboard. And think of if we woke up in the morning and everything that you thought or felt or reacted to you wrote down on a blackboard. Well, it's going to be a jumbled mess at the end of the day. Meditation quiets the mind. It helps you erase that blackboard so you can focus on one thing. And that's where you can listen to your higher self. That's where you can find what your purpose is. And, you know, your purpose may be to be a good parent. Your purpose may be to be the best auto mechanic possible. And I'm not being simplistic or demeaning because our true function in this world is to take the gifts we are given. Some people are great athletes, some people are mechanically inclined, some people are spiritual, some people are good lawyers, some people are good moms. You take your skill set. It is a service gift to be used in the service of other people to help them. And that is part of how you can find what your purpose is.
Great, great. People often ask, how can I evolve beyond my early religious teachings that don't make sense to me now, but still hold on to the core of them, the good parts? And what can you share about that, please?
I think that's an excellent question. I'm a proponent of religion, and I know I said this earlier in the program, but religion must never be used as a moral justification for anger, bigotry, hatred, and violence. When you look at what's going on with Muslim terrorists, and they're going around screaming that Allah wants them to wreak death and destruction upon people, nothing could be further from the truth and the core of belief in God. Just last week, not only did the militants in Iraq kill numerous people, but they destroyed archaeological treasures from ancient Assyria, and they blew up the tomb of the prophet Jonah because it didn't fit into their narrow-minded view of their dogmatic and fear-based religion. If you look at what's going on in this country right now, in the United States, with the whole debate over gay marriage and how religious fanatics who parade around as Christians, which they're anything but, and how they use a fear-based religion and Bronze Age superstition to try to persecute an entire group of people and somehow say that that's, you know, legal and constitutional. It's really sad because Jesus spoke about peace and love and understanding. He spoke about treating people the way you want to be treated. He taught that if you do not know God, if you do not know love, you do not know God, for God is love. He said that the Word of God is for everyone, not just for a particular group of people. And he brought a universal message of peace, love, and nonviolence. That's what faith in God is all about. And it always cracks me up because I get all these hateful comments on my Facebook page pretty much every day by quote-unquote good Christians, and they're always quoting something from, you know, Deuteronomy or Leviticus that mediums are not of God and you're evil and you're terrible and I believe in Scripture. Yeah, well, Deuteronomy and Leviticus also say that, you know, if your daughter enters a temple while she's menstruating, she must be put to death, and if your neighbor works on the Sabbath, you should have him put to death. I really hope that these fanatics are not taking all of this stuff literally. So what you have to do is get beyond the fear and the ignorance, and embrace what was Jesus really talking about? Peace, love, understanding. What was Buddha really talking about? Peace, love, understanding. What was Krishna talking about? Peace, love, understanding. And when you start looking at religions on their philosophical level, it's all about peace, love, understanding, do no harm. Every religion has a golden rule. The Buddhists say, do not do to other people what you do not want done to yourself. Christians say, do to other people how you would have them do to you. In other words, we're saying the same thing. So religion is a path to God, and as many people as there are in the world is as many potential paths to God as there are in the world. When I hear, unless you believe my way, there is only one and only way to God, it's like, really? You're talking about an entity which created the universe and multiverses, things we can't even comprehend, and what you're saying is that of creation, from a subatomic to an infinite, universal, intergalactic level, needs to be interpreted by Bronze Age superstitions, which have been edited through innumerable ecumenical councils, religious squabbling, and political compromise known as the King James Version of the Bible. Seriously?
I like a guest who speaks his own mind, Mark. Great job. Okay, so yeah, that's the whole point. Recognize that it's BS. I mean, our president Thomas Jefferson said a long time ago, he said that he thought that truth was embedded in the Bible as or like diamonds in a dung heap. And so obviously the wise person rejects the nonsense and focuses on those golden threads that, as you say, exist within all world's religions. Well, time has flown by so quickly. We're on our last question, which is, how can all this information we've been discussing help me deal with life's greatest challenges and make the world a better place?
I think we have to actually look to the teachings of the philosophical basis of all the major world religions, which are to treat other people the way you want to be treated. I like something that Golda Meir once said. She said, there will be peace in the Middle East when our Arab neighbors realize they love their children more than they hate us. I like what Gandhi said when he said, well, what religion is God? And we are all the children of God, so why do you raise your hands against your brothers and sisters simply because they call God by another name? So when you look at the people who really got it, and I talk about Buddha, Jesus, Gandhi, Mother Teresa, Yogananda Paramahansa, St. Francis of Assisi, St. Anthony of Padua. When you look at these great teachers, they're the ones that got it, and they realize that you don't use religion to bolster a political agenda, but instead to remove the anger and the hatred from people. I mean, Mother Teresa said, how could any war be holy? How could it? War is just horrible. And so when you start looking to that and realize that I love my children more than I hate my neighbor, then you will have peace. How can understanding of an afterlife help us here? My message, and I've outlined this in my book, Never Letting Go, and this is something that I try to impress upon people, is that does exist. Heaven exists. And you can call heaven the other side, nirvana, happy, you know, hunting ground, whatever, but there is an afterlife. That our soul is an immortal living spirit, and we can communicate with those souls, and when it is our time to revert to our immortal state as an infinite spirit, we'll be reunited with our loved ones in the light that is God.
Very good. And thank you so much, Mark, for your great answers to all these questions. You've been listening again to attorney Mark Anthony, the psychic lawyer. His website, neverlettinggo.com. Be sure to visit that. And share the show with your friends. Certainly the world could use this information.